Good morning, world. Welcome to Beijing Diary. This is the Sakai Report for Saturday, May 28th, 2022. And this morning we are faced with a horrible, horrible tragedy. Once again, there's been a mass shooting in Texas. When we look at these kinds of shootings, the tendency is to focus on a natural, and I mean obvious tendency, is to focus on the psychopathology of the killer. And there seem to be two different camps. This is a bit of a simplification, but generally two different viewpoints on what causes these mass killings. After the death of George Floyd, everybody was talking about racism, systemic racism, and then white supremacy. So you have that side saying that, you know, this is all racism, white supremacy. And then there are people like me who believe that all this talk about racism and white supremacy is a smokescreen for the real problem, which is fatherlessness. Because you can see a very consistent pattern of fatherlessness. So many times when we saw the police killings, you know, police, a white cop shooting a black suspect, you know, over and over again, you would see this pattern of this kid, a fatherless, angry fatherless kid resisting arrest. Now, I want to hasten to say that I believe American cops are way too trigger happy. Most of these deaths should have been, in my opinion, were avoidable and should have been avoided. But that doesn't mean they were racist. I do not believe that most of them are racist. They're a result of fatherlessness, fatherless black kids who don't know how to deal with authority. So you have the two sides, the systemic racism folks and the people like me, the fatherlessness people who believe that those other things are just a smokescreen. I mean, 93% of black homicides are black-on-black crimes. The overwhelming majority of blacks who are killed by homicide in America are killed by other blacks, so it can't be systemic racism. And there's no proof that, you know, all of the other 7% are where the white person kills a black person. It's that tiny minority, that any of them are white supremacists. Could be, but we don't have any proof of that. So how can you say that white supremacy is the defining problem of the age? Okay, but today, I want to look at it, the different aspect. So if you believe that the problem is racism, systemic racism, or white supremacy, and I believe that no, those things are smokescreens for the real problem, which is fatherlessness. You and I can have that knockdown, drag-out fight some other time. And I will be very glad to debate it with you. You know, even let you buy me a cup of coffee. If I'm in a good mood, I may even let you buy me dinner. But we'll talk about it. I'm not avoiding the discussion. But today I want to talk about what those kinds of crimes have in common, because ironically, we have two situations here. One that happened, 10 days ago, a couple weeks ago in Buffalo, New York. Clearly, white supremacy. The kid was a white supremacist. Very definitely, white supremacy was the predominant motivating factor. But when you look at the family structure and so on, fatherlessness doesn't seem to be part of the equation. Now, maybe we don't know as much, you know, what kind of relationship he had with his dad. But I mean, he lived with his mother. Oh, no, I guess he was. No, I think he was living with his parents. And he had a mother and a father. And as far as I know, his father was his actual father. Not the guy his mom was shacking up with, you know, which is so see over and over again in these the cases of these angry young fatherless black kids, Michael Brown in Missouri and Trayvon Martin and so on. So there's no evidence that fatherlessness played a large part, but clearly white supremacy was the was the motivating factor. But in this case in Texas, very definitely the issue of fatherlessness comes to the front, and there's no evidence of white supremacy being a factor. So what I want to talk about today is not, you know, which issue, the white supremacy and systemic racism or fatherlessness is the predominant problem of the age. What I want to talk about is what these two cases have in common and what all school shootings have in common. Semi-automatic rifles. Guns do kill people. Now, let me state, first of all, from the outset, I am not opposed to the Second Amendment. I have said often that the Second Amendment is a supreme example of well-written law. And by the way, I need to clarify that from the outset, because otherwise you're going to be a little confused by what I say. When I speak about guns, I don't speak from my interest in guns. I speak from my interest in law. My primary focus in law, and I've been, you know, involved in a moot court case when I was in high school, and I've been involved here in China coaching the moot court competition. It was the Jessup competition, which is international law. That's very interesting to me. Criminal law, very different areas of law are interesting to me, but my primary interest, my primary focus is on legislative law, which is to say, how do we write good law? In my opinion, the Second Amendment is a supreme example of good law. The Make My Day laws or Stand Your Ground laws, whatever you want to call them, are horrible. So understand that when I talk about this issue, it's not from an interest, a like or dislike of guns. It's from an interest in establishing good law. Now, in my years in America, and I lived in America for 40 years, I'm not from America originally. I was born in Japan. I grew up in Japan. But I did spend part of my childhood in America, too. So, you know, there's a mixture there. But in the American years, there's something we never heard about in Japan, but, you know, a debate about guns. We never heard that in Japan. Ironically, it affected us because we ordered some BB guns from America, from the Sears Roebuck catalog. And they were powered by these CO2 pellets, or CO2 cartridges, and then they had, you know, pellets. And boy, the police came to our house. The police came to our house in Ojiti. I mean, it was crazy what we had to go through just to get those BB guns. Japan has strict gun control laws. I live in China. China has strict gun control laws. You'd never have the kind of debate that you have in America, in either Japan or China, the other two countries I've lived in extensively. I'm not sure about Canada. I went to graduate school in Canada, but I didn't live there extensively. So I'm not sure how it would be in Canada. But Americans, you know, they like guns. And so I want to be very clear from where I'm coming from. I do not oppose the Second Amendment, but I am very concerned about the way it's implemented. And you have two extremes. You have the people like, I remember Newt Gingrich was talking about this issue, and he gave the example of Bill Clinton, who said, oh, I support the Second Amendment. I like to go duck hunting. And Newt Gingrich said the Second Amendment is not about duck hunting. It's about the right to protect ourselves from intrusive government. Well, I think Clinton is wrong, but I also think Newt Gingrich is not quite right either. Because it isn't just the protecting ourselves from an intrusive government. If you read the Second Amendment, it's basic law enforcement, a militia for, you know, the peace of the people. Now, I don't have time to get into that. I will talk about it. I will address that issue, but I'll have to do it in a separate program. I'll probably make a video blog or something because I want to show you some things about the law. I don't have time to cover it. In the Sakai Report is basically 22 minutes, 10 minutes, and then a news feed, and then 10 minutes. So I don't have time to talk about that now. But what I want to talk about today, and we've got to take a news break here real quick. But what I want to talk about today is one particular commonality, one particular common feature of all of these mass shootings, semi-automatic weapons. Okay, we got to take a break, and then we'll be right back. So don't touch that dial. We'll see you in a few minutes.
The political games have already started. Rolling Stone published this over the weekend. They said the Buffalo shooter isn't a lone wolf. He's a mainstream Republican. That was an interesting sentiment, but there are a lot of people going back and forth on gun laws as well. I saw multiple people posting about how this is not the time for politics and we need gun control, as if the gun control issue isn't political in any way, shape, or form. Ali Beth Stuckey and Beth Moore also went back and forth with each other on Twitter. Beth Moore was sort of posting and sort of grieving what had happened, but then added, talked about, you know, opening a fresh set of eyes to see the catastrophic consequences of white supremacy. And she said, for the love of God, throw off your political party lenses and look at the pain. And so she said that. And then Ali Beth Stuckey responded saying, highlighting the injustice of one kind of mass murder and not the other recent mass murders because they don't fit the right narrative is not telling the truth. It's politics. And so then Beth Moore responded again, just saying that it was blatantly motivated by white supremacy, which I think kind of misses the point of what Ali's point was. So, but it's that back and forth ended there. But that's just to give you a taste of sort of some of the back and forth that's going on here and how the different sides see it.
Rolling Stone. Oh, man. I'm not going to go there now. Probably never. I think Rolling Stone is pretty much a has-been. That clip, by the way, is from a show on CBN Radio called Daily Rundown. You can get the CBN News Radio app or CBN Radio app if you want, but I like the podcast. I'm a podcast guy because podcasts are asynchronous, you know. I can watch whatever program or listen to whatever program I want whenever I want to watch it or listen to it. Most video and audio podcasts. But for those of you who don't know the personalities, Ali Beth Stuckey and Beth Moore are both evangelical Christians. And Ali Beth Stuckey is more on the right side, right end of it, the political spectrum. She's a good friend of Candace Owens, I guess. Beth Moore, much more on the left side, way, 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 way left. She obviously comes from a Democrat background because she's always throwing out these classic Democrat arguments. But I really haven't had that much interchange with Ali Beth Stuckey, but Beth Moore, you know, during the election, and actually right after the election, there was a lot of controversy because Republicans were concerned about fraud in the election. My personal view is that there was fraud. We don't know the extent to extent to which it affected the election. But it doesn't matter what my personal view is. They had a view of it, and they felt, you know, they were doing Stop the Steal, and they were really upset. And, you know, in America, people have a right to support their candidate, and Beth Moore was calling them Nazis, saying they're Christian nationalists. She was basically calling them Nazis. And that annoyed me, you know. Yeah, even someone like Bill Maher, who is not conservative by any stretch, is very liberal in his politics, but he says, you can hate Trump, but you can't hate the people who like him. That's half the country. People have a right to support their candidates. So then she put out this tweet about saying we have to be nicer. And I'm like, look who's talking. And so I replied to her tweet, you know. I don't know what I said, but something in that order. And she sent me back a message. She said, I like your beard, Eric. Well, thank you very much, you know. And I don't think that's an insincere compliment. I mean, Beth Moore is nothing if not sincere. She's a very sincere person. But when Beth Moore, if you're listening, my dear sister, I wasn't trying to get you to say something nice about me. I wanted you to say something nice about those godly Republicans who are standing up for what they believe. Whether or not you agree with them or like their candidate, they're standing up for what they believe. In America, you get to support your candidate. But really, the interesting thing about this back and forth, for one thing, that I noticed right away, living in China, American evangelicals are the most political Christians in the world. Chinese evangelicals are the least political Christians in the world because, you know, there can be issues. during the Cultural Revolution, if you weren't saying "Long live Chairman Mao" every other sentence, you know, you'd get in trouble. But now, after the Cultural Revolution, the situation changed. And now, you're allowed to be apolitical. Now, if you openly criticize the powers that be, then you might disappear, as we've seen in a couple of recent incidents, Jack Ma, for example. But if you choose the apolitical route, usually, you know, the government leaves you alone. So Chinese Christians are emphatically apolitical. If Beth Moore and Ellie Bastucky met in an American church, would they be polite? Yes, I think they would be cordial. Would they be close? No. That would not be possible because their politics would overwhelm their Christianity, I'm afraid. And that's kind of unfortunate. If they were in a church together in China, would they be close? No reason not to. They wouldn't know they had a political difference. So that's one thing I really like about Chinese Christianity. Anyway, but what I want to talk about is the juxtaposition of those two cases. You know, whatever you say about white supremacy, if you focus on white supremacy as the cause of all the world's problems, like Beth Moore tends to do, or if you focus on fatherlessness as the cause of all the problems, like I tend to do, you know, if we're going to examine the psychopathology of the shooter, I'm going to look for fatherlessness because I tend to think that's the root of the problem. The systemic racism types are going to look for white supremacy. But it's very interesting in this case because the case in Buffalo clearly was a case of white supremacy, no indication of fatherlessness. And the case in Texas, no indication of systemic racism or white supremacy, but clearly an indication of fatherlessness. So it's turning out that the common factor in these school shootings is not the psychopathology of the killer. It's the weapon. It is the weapon, semi-automatic weapon. The NRA says guns don't kill people, people kill people. Yeah, but people kill people with guns. Listen to me. I am not opposed to the Second Amendment. Now, some people would attack the amendment or something like, you know, people on the left seem to disregard it or almost wish it didn't exist. The Second Amendment is a supreme example of well-written law. The Make My Day laws and the, you know, whatever standard ground laws, they're terrible. I don't like them. But the Second Amendment, I wouldn't change a syllable. It's good law. We just need to follow it. And the right to bear arms is based on the need for a militia. So that people who had arms were under a command structure. It is pure insanity to have 17, 18-year-old kids walking around with semi-automatic weapons without being under any kind of supervision. That's the part that has to change. And I have to tell you, I've kind of lost respect for the NRA. Now, I've had sort of a love-hate relationship with the NRA all my life. And at first, I didn't like them. But then I started to respect them because they were so well-researched. And they won my respect. But after the Trayvon Martin case, I lost respect for them. They always say, you know, we shouldn't go after the gun, we should go after the killer. But then they support the killer. There was a case where a young black kid who was not committing any crime and was unarmed was being followed by a guy with a gun, just continually following him. He calls 911 and they say, you need to stop doing that, or we don't need you to be doing that. You know, stop following him. He didn't stop following him. He shot him and killed him. Clearly, he was the one who provoked the situation, and the NRA takes his side, or the NRA people take his side. The something has got to change. Guns do kill people. We have to do something. Now, I don't have time to go into all the details, but I'll do a separate program on the Second Amendment. But we're coming down to this, you guys. We've put too much attention on the psychopathology of the killer. Now, I don't agree with these people. You know, Beto O'Rourke made a fool of himself. I hope he apologizes because, you know, it's a very emotional situation, and people sometimes say things they wish they hadn't. I don't believe in getting rid of all guns, but there does have to be a command structure when you're dealing with what is clearly a military-grade weapon. Guns do kill people. And again, I'll talk about it in more detail. It's not the idea that we take away everybody's weapon. You know, I live in China, which has gun control, strict gun control. As a child, I lived in America, which has, in Japan, which has very strict gun control. America's not going to follow that pattern. And I'm not saying that they should. But something has to be done to prevent the situation where young people, unsupervised, are carrying around semi-automatic weapons. In a school shooting situation, a semi-automatic is much more deadly than an automatic. Much more, because you have time to aim for each shot. An automatic is 20 shots in 3 seconds, you know. Most of them go wild. So when they say they're not automatic, they're just semi-automatic. Semi-automatic is much more dangerous than an automatic. Okay, you guys. Well, I will come back to this issue, but we got to go now. So thanks for being with us, and we'll see you next time. Podcast is hosted online at beijingdiary.podbean.com. That's beijingdiary.podbean.com.